My name is Sheldon Karasik. I am a New York-based attorney. I've been practicing for 40 years, and it's my mandate to fight mandates. I'm going to talk about the principal way I've been doing it for the past several months, and that is using our anti-discrimination laws to assert religious exemptions to the mandate. I'm going to run through how the laws are structured, and then I'm going to discuss some of the ways to expand those laws and give us even greater protections. And then I'll finish by touching briefly on some constitutional law issues. So we have, of course, federal and state law. At the federal level, we have the 1964 Civil Rights Law, which prohibits discrimination on a host of protected grounds, including religion. Title VII of that law applies to employment. And anyone who is forced to get a vaccine in his place of employment has rights under Title VII to assert religious discrimination. Title IV of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which a lot of people don't know about, prohibits discrimination on religious grounds and other grounds in places of education. And although Title VII doesn't give you an immediate right of action in court, there is, of course, the agency, the federal EEOC, that one can go before if you are facing that discrimination in employment and you can't work out the exemption at that level. Title IV gives you a right of action right away, and there's also the Department of Justice that can also assert litigation in Title IV. Now, that's the federal level. So 64 Civil Rights Act, Title VII, Title IV. We have parallel provisions in various state laws. And in fact, most states have anti-discrimination laws that protect one in employment and in places of public accommodation, which are often defined to include educational institutions. In addition to those anti-discrimination laws at most state levels, there are also equal educational opportunity laws in various states. And of course, if there's an equal opportunity educational law, that would cover your rights in an educational institution to be free of discrimination, including religious discrimination. So we have a body of law at the federal and state level that prohibits religious discrimination and other forms under the protected categories at educational institutions, places of public accommodation, which are actually broader than educational institutions. It's most any public setting, and in the employment field. And when I talk briefly about the Constitution at the end, of course, that only applies vis-a-vis public employers or the government. Now, that's the basic setup. Let's talk about what's the basis for the assertion of a discrimination claim or a religious exemption to getting the vaccine. Now, the argument that, the factual argument that has been made and is still made is that the vaccine descends from the fetal cells used or tested for using tissue from aborted fetuses. That's fine. But what a lot of people don't understand is we don't need the exact science or the exact medicine to support and substantiate one's claim for religious exemption. What do I mean by that? The law is clear. In order to seek a religious exemption and claim discrimination, whether we're talking about employment, in places of public accommodation, or education, you only need a sincerely held religious belief. A sincerely held religious belief. Now, that belief doesn't have to be a conventional belief. It doesn't have to be a recognized belief. It doesn't even have to be a normal belief. It only has to be a sincerely held religious belief. Now, if you doubt that, consider this case. There was an employee who was long-term, very good employee at a company, I believe it was West Virginia, and the company he worked at introduced a biometric hand scanner. You know, you check in at work, you know, in the old days we punched in. Well, now it's all high-tech stuff, right? So they introduced a biometric hand scanner. Last time I looked at one of those things, they're not particularly dangerous. However, for this particular employee, he claimed it's the hand of the devil. It's the hand of the devil. Can't put his hand in that scanner. It's the hand of the devil. I'm religiously exempt from getting that scan because my religious beliefs are offended. My God, it's the devil. It sounds a little out there, right? Guess what? A few years later, he collected $600,000. $600,000. That went all the way up to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is not known to, you know, to be the most liberal in the employment discrimination field. So what's the takeaway from that? Who's looking inside your heart and soul? Who's saying what you feel? Who's even questioning the basis of those beliefs? They can't. Okay? They can't. And the law is clear that they can't, despite the fact they often think they can. People always ask me, is that against the law? Yeah, but they're going to try to do it anyway. And that's the scenario we face. Now, so the process is, to get that exemption, you contact the institution and you claim, with whatever factual basis you're comfortable asserting, that I am opposed to getting this jab in me for religious reasons. My sincerely held religious beliefs are opposed to it. You may mention the abortion issue. A lot of my clients do. You may cite biblical sources. Some do that as well. You often want to support that, but you don't have to, with a letter from a lawyer. The advantage of that, obviously, is they're now facing not just a request, but an indication of what the consequences are if they deny it. Now, it doesn't give the person seeking the request any greater rights. The rights exist irrespective of the attorney's involvement. It just scares the entity a little bit about denying it. And I think the reason they like to deny these things is because they're afraid that everybody's going to try to find a way to circumvent the mandate. So if you don't have the attorney behind you, those are oftentimes the people they single out to deny the request. Now, how does the process work a little bit? Once you assert that request for a religious exemption, a right to accommodate your religious views, and of course, Title VII, Title IV, state anti-discrimination laws, it's all the same process, then that triggers a duty on their part. It's a duty to reasonably accommodate your religious principles. So let's think about this for a minute. How are they going to accommodate your sincerely held religious principles if we're talking about a vaccine? Well, there's only one way, right? You don't get it, right? That's the only accommodation available. You don't get the vaccine. It's not like other situations where, you know, they adjust a work schedule or you can wear a certain headgear certain days or something like that, and there's some compromise. There's no compromise. It's all or nothing. The only accommodation is not to require that you get the vaccine. Okay, now here's the kicker. Under Title VII, and in most, and virtually every state law I've looked at, the accommodation is required only if it can be done by the employer or the institution without undue hardship. Now, what's that mean? Well, unfortunately, there was a very unhelpful Supreme Court decision, TWA versus Hardison from 74, I think, which first laid out a definition of what undue hardship is. And what the court said, and it hasn't reversed it or changed it or anything else since then, is that is any burden more than de minimis? So if your accommodation requires that you don't get vaccinated, and somehow that imposes a burden on the school or on your employer that is more than de minimis, they don't have to accommodate. But when we're talking about a vaccine, what's the burden that a business or a school would face? So what courts are going to start doing is talk about the risk that others face, right? Along the lines of what happened in the IU case, the risk that others face. And what they're going to do is they're then going to say, okay, you have a valid basis for that religious exemption, but we're going to require X, Y, and Z from you. And everybody knows what X, Y, and Z is, right? It's the mask. It's the social distancing. It's the constant testing, et cetera, et cetera. When that happens, we go into round two. We then want to try to negotiate the terms of the exemption you got. Now, the IU case wasn't helpful in that respect, right? Because at the end of the decision, the court said, these kids are going to want to be masked up. They're seeking an exemption from an exemption. Well, it's not an easy negotiation, nor is it easy to accomplish. But that's in the way I approach these things strategically. That's a different process. First, I get the exemption. I put it in my back pocket. Then I try to negotiate away some of the onerous conditions. But the main takeaway is, and this is Title VII, more than state anti-discrimination laws, is that the exemption is an accommodation, is only required if there isn't an undue burden. Now, they say undue burden on the employer, it would be the same thing to the institution, which is your school, okay? And that leads to round two. Now, let's talk a little bit now about what is the nature of the religious beliefs that would apply here, the nature of the religious beliefs that you're entitled to assert and get an accommodation for. Remember the West Virginia case. Now, a lot of people don't realize that the law is developing in this area in several respects. Number one, it doesn't have to be a belief in traditional religion. You don't have to be a churchgoer, a Sabbath worshiper, anything like that. As the EEOC stated, I'm quoting, that no religious group espouses the belief or the fact that a religious group to which the individual professes to belong doesn't accept the belief will not determine whether the belief is a religious belief of the employee. I just had this issue with a New Jersey prestigious university, the most prestigious university in New Jersey. And my client and I applied for the religious exemption. And as is the case, I sent my correspondence to the university president and my client submitted online through their online portal. And we got a response, not from a lawyer, not from general counsel. We got a response from a doctor who's in charge of their COVID program. And the doctor said, you're wrong about what the fetal tissue descends from. You're wrong about it, what's used. Do you really want to apply for this exemption? Let's discuss the science. Let's go back to what I said before. You don't discuss the science. What I wrote to the doctor is, send that request and your response to a lawyer. I'm not talking to a doctor because I don't care who accepts the science. This is my client's religious belief. It could be flawed. He doesn't have to be right about what these fetal cells descend from. It's his heartfelt religious belief. And I don't care if the Pope says, get jabbed. I don't care if the chief rabbi says, get jabbed. I don't even care, frankly, if the person up there says, get jabbed. It doesn't affect the validity of an individual's right to say no and assert a religious exemption on that basis. Now, along those lines, there are a couple of interesting court decisions. There are more, but let me just mention two to you. There's an Ohio court decision, Chenzera case, which held that a vegan's objection to the flu vaccine because it grew in chicken eggs could qualify as a religious exemption, because that belief was held with the sincerity of a religious belief. And this is critical language. I'm going to go through some more examples. A belief held with the strength and sincerity of religious belief, not a religious belief necessarily, something you hold with that degree of passion and commitment. There was another interesting case, a West Virginia case, Allianz Systems, where the refusal to join a union could qualify as a religious belief, because to be such, it must only stem from moral, ethical, or religious belief as to what is right and wrong, and must be held with the strength of religious convictions. We are expanding what a religious belief means in the discrimination context to cover all sorts of things that I believe can touch upon some of the pseudoscientific bases for that this vaccine that we can challenge. Now, there's another interesting line of attack in terms of expanding what religion means for purposes of an exemption. Roughly 16 states have immunization laws that allow for personal belief exemptions to school immunization. Personal belief exemptions to school immunization for the kids from K to 12. Now, a vaccine in a university setting is just that, isn't it? Isn't it a school immunization requirement? So if your state, you're one of the 16 states that has a personal belief exemption, and you're at a public college, how can that college not give you the same exemption under that state's law that you have if you're K to 12? You don't lose it when you go into the 13th grade, right? It's illogical. Now, another interesting line of attack is this. A number of state anti-discrimination laws reference creed rather than religious discrimination. Some say religious creed, but a number just say creed discrimination. Creed is a belief system. It's inclusive of, but it's broader than religion. So basically, if these states thought about what their anti-discrimination law really meant, what they're saying is, if you have a belief system opposed to, in this scenario, the vaccine or anything else on a religious discrimination front, then that's good enough to get an exemption. If your belief system supports that, it would be creed discrimination to deny it. For example, New Jersey prohibits discrimination based on creed. I'm quoting now from the Office of the Attorney General, the Civil Rights Division in New Jersey, which stated that discrimination based on creed protects you if you have a sincere and meaningful moral or ethical belief which you hold with the strength of traditional religious views. Again, a meaningful moral ethical belief which you hold with that same level of sincerity as one has a religious belief. Well, what does that mean? That means that you have a belief system exemption to a vaccine or any other imposition that a university or an employer may seek to impose upon you based on your personal belief system. It comes right out of the anti-discrimination law, which talks about creed discrimination. And it's not happenstance they use that word, creed. Now, interestingly, four states, by my count, reference creed discrimination in the anti-discrimination law and also provide for a personal belief vaccine exemption in the school immunization law. Okay? So you have some states where you have both arguments. Discrimination is based on creed in the anti-discrimination law, and that's protected, creed. And also, the state immunization laws protect you based on your personal beliefs. Now, interestingly, of those four states, Minnesota prohibits creed and religious discrimination. So think about that for a second. They drafted a statute that prohibits creed and religious discrimination. Well, they weren't asleep at the wheel, right? I mean, it is a legal principle that all words have to be given effect within a statute when you try to figure out legislative intent. If they're saying creed and religion, there's only one obvious meaning to that. Now, unfortunately, the Minnesota Court of Appeals did not accept that argument in a split decision. It was 2-1, I believe. One judge did. But I think that this is, you know, this is a process along the lines of what Jim was saying, that we have to keep fighting these challenges. But it's very interesting to have a state law that prohibits both creed and religious discrimination. Now, let me give you another example of that, which I like, which is Colorado, one of the four states which prohibits creed discrimination and also has a personal belief exemption in its immunization law. Colorado mentions creed and religious discrimination and Colorado states in its rules of practice, creed and religion are defined as a religious, moral, or ethical belief which is sincerely held and includes all aspects of religious observance and practice. Again, that language we've seen in several settings already. Moral or ethical belief, sincerely held. You cannot discriminate against one based upon that. And I don't see it being much of a stretch to go from there to one's philosophical, moral, ethical belief that the vax is all wrong. The laws are out there for us, and there are ways to take advantage of them. Now, the last point I want to make along these lines in terms of broadening, expanding the definition of what religion means in our laws comes from the Supreme Court in a couple of Selective Service Act cases. They're called U.S. versus Seeger and U.S. versus Welsh. They both involve challenges to the conscientious objective provision of the Selective Service Act, which allowed the exemption for one's religious training and belief if they conscientiously opposed war. Religion in that statute was defined as a belief in relation to the supreme being involving duties superior to those arising under human relations, but didn't include essentially political, sociological, or philosophical views or a pure moral code. There was no exemption for those types of belief systems unless they were traditionally religious. Well, the Supreme Court set that aside. And in doing so, they expanded the definition of religious beliefs to include, here we go again, moral, ethical, or religious beliefs about what is right and wrong when the beliefs are held with the strength of traditional religious convictions. Again, moral, ethical, or religious beliefs. Tell me why a moral, ethical belief that the vaccine is wrong is not something that is protected under an expansive definition of religion, which is based upon the law and, in fact, based upon Supreme Court decisions that go all the way back to the Vietnam era. These are all ways to challenge the vaccine mandate on non-religious grounds, but using the religious exemption. We use the religious exemption to broaden the definition of religion and challenge the vaccine on all of the bases we believe in. It's pseudoscience. It's rush to the market. Moral grounds, ethical grounds, philosophical grounds. It's there for us. It's not going to happen overnight. Like Jim said, it's a process, but it's available. Finally, without getting into constitutional issues much, these arguments are also applicable to the First Amendment, freedom of religion, and the prohibition against the establishment of religion. Because we talked about before, a university, private employer cannot say, like Princeton tried to do, you're wrong about those religious beliefs. We don't really accept your argument. They can't define what is a religious belief. And I think we have the same argument that we can raise under the First Amendment when we go against public universities and the government, because of course constitutional rights only apply vis-a-vis public entities or the government. We can assert that same argument, and it's been accepted. There are cases which basically say an institution which said you only have a religious exemption if it's supported by a traditional religious belief is unconstitutional. The court held that was unconstitutional. Why? Because it's denying your free exercise of religion. You can't cherry pick as an institution what's religious, what isn't religious. It's not your right. And not only is it not your right under the anti-discrimination laws, More importantly, it's not your right under the Constitution. When they make a religious exemption available, and there's a whole other issue about whether they have to, but I'm going to sidestep that. When they make that available, they open the door. They cannot say his is, hers isn't. They don't have that right. And that particular case I was referencing, I think it's Boozman versus McCarthy out of Arkansas, made that point very clearly. They cannot cherry pick what your rights are. And once they try to do that, once they make a religious exemption available, end of story, whether it's the anti-discrimination laws or the Constitution, as long as it's sincerely held religious belief, they are on the hook to grant it, they break the law, and they violate your First Amendment rights if you don't. That's why my mandate is to fight these mandates. Thank you.